Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com get every day. Readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com are constantly provided the information that detail the real news between the lines of propaganda about government policies and the true relationship we all have with coercive governments. Learn the true condition of our economy, innovations and technological breakthroughs in energy, health, computer science, and space travel. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media, the media that is so last century. Corporate media has evolved into nothing more than distributors of government propaganda, but we now have a fantastic alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com provides constant news updates on the issues that affect our lives in the most important ways. Our liberty and our property are under constant attack, and FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda while encouraging the participation of our readers. Join us at FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com, where the revolution between the ears has already matured.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
No fear here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock. Yeah, we got, the theme on the video there is eye patch. Yeah, I got my eyes going crazy here. That's all right. You get to put up with, beautiful me. But, what we're going to go ahead and do today is we're going to have a conversation with a gentleman that we're going to disagree on some things, but I'll tell you what. We need to have this conversation. It's very important that we understand what it is that is being advocated across the airwaves and in the lamestream media, the media that's so last century, because I've been hearing some crazy stuff, and I'm sure that Chris Hellman from National Priorities Project is going to agree with me. Crazy stuff, where we have Vice President Biden coming out, saying, well, okay, yeah, I pinky sweared and promised that we were going to be out of Afghanistan by 2014. Maybe not. I'm so shocked. And then we have Martin Luther King holiday, celebration of Martin Luther King Monday. And all of a sudden we're getting out, from the Department of Defense, Pentagon coming out saying, well, Martin Luther King, he would be in support of us killing people in Afghanistan. Of course he would. We write the history books. We're going to say, now let's see the other side. They may have an opinion. Will they be rewriting it in another way to benefit whatever it is they want? We're going to find out. Chris Hellman is budget analyst for the National Priorities Project. Do I got you there, Chris?
You do.
Chris, go ahead and help me understand what the National Priorities Project is. Because right off the bat, I can tell from that right there, it's going to be national, and we're going to have priorities, and there's a project for it. Okay?
Right. So, what NPP attempts to do is demystify the federal budget process. We think that an awful lot of things go on with our taxpayers' dollars being done, in our name, and yet the majority of Americans don't really have an understanding of, A, what it is that's being done, and, B, how the work gets done in Washington. And we think that as participants in a democracy, you need an informed electorate, and one of the things you need to understand is how your tax dollars are being spent. And that's the priorities portion, which is are the dollars being spent the way you think they ought to be? And what we want to do is make it clear to people how the dollars are being spent, so that they can be informed participants in the national debate about the direction our federal government ought to go in.
Okay. I want them to stop taking my money. That's my vote. Okay.
Right.
And, if I had a majority of people saying stop taking my money, would they stop taking my money?
Well, if you have a majority doing it, hopefully you
do
can.
Do I need a majority?
Yeah. Well, you probably do. And, I mean, that's one of the things that's been really interesting about the last year and a half and the emergence of the Tea Party as a vibrant political force, which was, you know, you may disagree or agree with where the Tea Party stands on various issues, and to my mind, it's kind of hard to get a read exactly where they are because they're a group of rugged individuals rather than a centralized political movement in the traditional sense. But one of the things that they've said is, we think you need to listen to us more closely because we're dissatisfied with what's going on. They didn't get a majority, but they got enough people interested in that message that, you know, they're going to be players in what goes on in Washington for at least the next 2 years. So, you know, when you can motivate that kind of support for, you know, a political movement or a political ideology, you can affect change.
Okay, let me go ahead and share something that I think is applies to our conversation. At the top of Freedom's Phoenix today, let me go ahead and see if I can find it here for the visual audience. We had a letter from a gentleman that's on LouRockwell.com saying that they're going on about how, you know, how to phrase this is that the libertarian movement, this freedom, this love-olution, this concept that we just want to be left alone, and I don't care what your majority says. In fact, the whole concept of having our country was based on the fact that we would support the concept that I'm allowed to go about my business and not have to worry about the majority taking from me by force. Now, this gentleman wrote this article, Am I Being Unfair to the Republican Liberty Caucus? Now, the Republican Liberty Caucus is this kind of supposed to be the libertarian orientation of inside the Republican Party, and they're going to be represented by, and of course, they make the claim, we won, we got all kinds of people in, and it was based on our philosophy and this and that. And the criticism from the real libertarians out here is going, no, you didn't. You're just wanting to socially or economically engineer our lives in a different way. What about those of us that wish not to be engineered? And the reason that I wanted to have this conversation with you is that you use a lot of the speech parts of various different speakers. Certainly Eisenhower's farewell speech is one of my favorites. And to make your point, what was it that you were using his rhetoric and the speech that he had, and what point were you trying to make with it?
Well, I mean, what he's most famous for and the speech, as you point out, covers a much broader range of this. He speaks to, you know, the role of government overall, and argues, I think, quite eloquently, although not convincingly in my mind, that bigger is not necessarily better. But the portion that you know, traditionally people focus on is his emphasis on the power of the military-industrial complex. In shaping security policy. It's a much more focused portion of his speech, and it was intriguing for a lot of people, and is to this day, because obviously, in addition to being commander-in-chief, you know, he was the commander of Allied forces in Europe, you know, in World War II, and a man renowned for his leadership qualities as a lifelong military guy. So to hear him talking about the role that the military-industrial complex would have in shaping U.S. policy is the one that resonates so often with people, and usually what they identify with that particular speech, even though as you pointed out, it's a much broader subject area.
Yeah, you know, let's read the paragraph. I have it up on the screen now that you're talking about. In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes. We should take nothing for granted. Only an alert and knowledgeable citizenry can compel the proper meshing of the huge industrial military machinery of defense with our peaceful methods and goals so that security and liberty may prosper together. Now, I understand exactly what he was saying as you read the whole speech, and we'll get into some more of it. But that part right there is, he was, you know, here's the guy that was the Allied commander going into Normandy, World War II, head of, becomes president, kind of, I'm done with my public service, I'm giving a farewell speech, this is what I got to say, and gosh darn it, you should listen to me because I know. So I'm paying attention to the boy. Now, the thing is that, you know, unwarranted influence. Well, where does that influence come from? From whom? And to accomplish what? If we're not spending it on the military-industrial complex, is there something else we should steal your money for that's a noble cause? What is it? Well, we're going to find out from Chris Hellman from the National Priorities Project when we come back here on Declare Your Independence in just a little bit.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Yeah, what are we fighting for here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, each and every day from the beautiful studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com here in Phoenix, Arizona. Well, we're all doing very well except for my left eye, but, you know, we'll get chemtrails. Now, what we're going to do is we're talking with Chris Hellman from National Priorities Project, and I want to make sure Chris gets to fully express himself because he represents a large segment of society that wants, I guess the word, you know, if you were going to, you know, try and encapsulate it in one collective, you'd call it social justice. You know, we need to have a balance here. It's got, and Eisenhower talked about that very thing. He was going, only an alert and knowledgeable citizenry can compel the proper meshing of the huge industrial and military machinery of defense with our peaceful methods and goals so that security and liberty may prosper together. A knowledgeable citizenry can, only a knowledgeable citizenry can compel. It's always going to be force. Force of what? Of the vote. Well, I say they control the voting with computers or whatever, so it doesn't matter anyway. But, you know, think about that. Compel. Now, he went on. Now, this is the part that got all the attention with Eisenhower in his speech, his farewell. You know, here's a supreme, you know, Allied commander of, becomes president, and I think he, you know, had, you know, kind of concerns, and he wanted to share in his last speech. You didn't hear anything from him after that. He's like, you know, hey, I did my bit, man. I warned you. And in a lot of his writings and so on, he would say, he goes, you know, I fear for the next president. Somebody comes in here, doesn't know what the heck's going on. And I think JFK knew enough what was going on. That's how he winds up dead. So I'm going, all right. Then he says, the very next paragraph, akin to and largely responsible for the sweeping changes in our industrial military posture has been the technological revolution during recent decades. Now, keep in mind, this is January 1961. Okay, what are we, 50 years later? You know, this, you know, long time ago. In this revolution, research has become central. It also becomes more formalized, complex, and costly. A steadily increasing share is conducted for, by, or at the direction of the federal government. Today, the solitary inventor tinkering in his shop has been overshadowed by task forces of scientists in laboratories and testing fields. In the same fashion, the free university, historically the fountainhead of free ideas and scientific discovery, has experienced a revolution in the conduct of research. Partly because of the huge costs involved, a government contract becomes virtually a substitute for intellectual curiosity. Then he goes on. Now, my point is this. You go out and you have all school-age children taking their tests, and they get their SATs, and they, you know, doing their iPad, mental scanning, like make the ball go, and meditation, love it, and everything, and writing Facebook, MySpace, everything online. You know what? They know who the technological superior intellectual Zimmerman Facebooking kind of guys are. They go, oh, it's just like the movie Serenity, Firefly. You got River Thames, this genius girl, and the state goes and plucks her and says, you're in the service of the state now. This is happening not later. This happens now. And if we don't have a philosophy of what the proper role of government is, that everything that you do, if it is not in defense of individual liberty, a technological ruling elite that will compel through our peaceful processes whatever the hell it is that they want to do. And I'm about keeping my money. I want my money. Mine. I want it for me, for my family, whatever the hell it is that I want. Mine. I want my freedom back. When we have the military-industrial complex screaming because all of the fleecing, all the butchering, all the shearing that they've done of the livestock, the American people, and the planet, and all of a sudden it's still not enough. I mean, it'll never be enough. To the point there isn't any more you can produce, then really bad things start happening. Because in the end, freedom always wins. It just gets really, really messy first. Now, during that time, you'll have a counter to that. People, if you weren't using all the, you know how much a bomb costs, a drone attack, a hellfire missile impact? If we took that money and did what we wanted to do with it, then everything would be better. It never, ever addresses stop stealing it from me in the first place. That's my opinion. Now we have Chris Hellman. Now, he's from the National Priorities Project. Now, they are tracking the evil uses of the money, and they want to advocate better uses of the money. Yeah, you understand my opinion. Now it's your turn to give your spiel. I want to make sure you go ahead and share with us that I'm going to be happy about you taking my money to do another noble cause. What is the noble cause?
Well, we don't actually have a noble cause. Our noble cause goes back to what President Eisenhower was saying about the necessity of vigilance on the part of the American people as to, you know, what was going on with the process. We're supporters of vigilance. We believe that, you know, a better informed electorate makes better choices. And ultimately, budgeting is about prioritization, whether you want to keep it in your pocket or spend it on something else. That's making a choice.
One thing that it's a good point. You know, yeah. A better informed populace. What do you think the threat is of the government getting involved in internet control, censoring, biometric check on? You're not allowed to inform your neighbors, kind of thing.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm a great believer in the value of the First Amendment and unregulated speech, no matter how. No matter how distasteful it is. I remember being at I was a congressional staffer for 10 years in Washington in the 80s and 90s, and I remember being at a presentation about flag burning that was being held in front of a bunch of veterans who were supportive of an amendment to the Constitution to ban flag burning. And one of the people who opposed the amendment stood up and said, "Face it, you know, the First Amendment is really for assholes. It's not to protect speech we like, it's to protect speech we don't like. In fact, it's to protect speech we hate." So I think that, you know, government's role in promoting the First Amendment is probably one of its most important, despite how we might use that. But I think that, you know, anytime the government steps in to regulate speech or the flow of information, it's incumbent on us to be very, very leery of how and why they're attempting to do it.
Well, I'm looking for, from certainly the left, as we have a Democratic president in there, to kind of hold his feet to the fire. I mean, this is, a lot of people, certainly from a libertarian perspective, you're assuming I see a difference. You know, it doesn't matter, Bush, Obama, Republican, Democratic Congress, it doesn't make any difference. Government keeps expanding and our rights keep diminishing every single time. So I'm looking for when this happens and they come after the internet. And how hard are you going to fight against a biometric interface to be able to post on your Facebook?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. I think that we're going to have to wait and see until it happens. And you know, one of the things that's intriguing that you just said, and I agree with it wholeheartedly, is that when I met my first libertarian, because growing up in New England, we didn't have those. They made the point that you did, that Democrats and Republicans are identical in one way, which is government. They make government bigger.
Government's going to keep getting bigger. We'll talk about more when we come back here on Declare Your Independence in just a little bit with Chris Hillman.
Roads? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Yeah, what's that goal here? Declare your independence of me, Ernest Hancock. No roads, that's what it is. Yeah, it always comes down to, Chris, is, yeah, libertarians, but what about the roads? Yeah, you know, we'd have our Jetsonmobiles by now if it wasn't for government taking everything. You know, the one thing that I did want to go over, a lot of the things that you point out, is that, you know, we have, like, New York, you know, and how many Head Start eligible children could get funded if we didn't spend all the money that just New Yorkers were spending on? They'd be, everybody is eligible for 21 years. Well, of course, you know, you would assume that most people would be in support of Head Start. Then you start with Wisconsin, has 527,000 uninsured residents. For Wisconsin's cumulative Afghan war spending, just Afghanistan, I guess, the state could provide insurance for all uninsured for 3 years. Washington State consumes a whole bunch of, energy units, and they could put it into renewable and green for the cost of the war, doing it that way. At the University of North Carolina, North Carolina's share of total war spending, $34 billion, would fund all the in-state expenses of a four-year education for each incoming freshman class for the next 135 years. So this is the point that you're making, is that if we were to be able to go ahead and make use of this allocation of resources in a more, I'm sure you would term it more humane way or beneficial. How would you term it? It would be, we're going to take this money and do what with it? It's a better what?
Well, I'm going to quibble with the word better, because that's a value judgment. There, as you point out, you know, if you're supportive of Head Start, obviously that's something you're going to want to do. The purpose of this fact sheet, the series of fact sheets that you're looking at, was to show the order of magnitude to people of what our investments in Iraq and Afghanistan have cost us, and what we call opportunity cost, which is, if you had the money available, what else might you do with it?
And keep it.
And the truth of the matter is that, you know, the average citizen doesn't really understand conceptually the difference between millions, billions, and trillions. The numbers are so big that they don't really have any meaning. And so what we attempt to do is tell the story at a level that has meaning to them, which is, how would this money work in your community, in your state? And we find that as a tool of discovery, that's a much more effective way to tell the story than to say, you know, the F-22 fighter program is worth $185 billion. That, you know, that doesn't mean anything to you and I.
I understand your point, but it's like, you know, taking tests in grade school where they'll go, you know, if you have 10 homeless people without this and they have two blankets, then how much? I mean, it's indoctrination. You know, it's kind of, you know, setting them over toward it. I mean, you would never use an example of how much a family of four would just get to keep. You see my point?
Yeah, that's a fair point. And, you know, it's one of the things that we struggle with, which is, how do you tell the story without placing any values on it at all?
Placed a value on it.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, ideologically, how do you become, you know, politically neutral? That's one of the things that we at MPP try and think about regularly. We're often not successful.
Well, let me help you, okay? It always comes down to the individual. Always. Right. You keep thinking collective, and so do they. You know, collectively we can get B-2 bombers. You know, collectively we can spend on Head Start. Collectively we can get, you know, fill in the blank. You know, it never is what the promise was. That's why this show is Declare Your Independence, because the Declaration of Independence was very clear. If you're going to have a government of any kind, it is there to defend individual rights. If it does not do that, then it's an enemy of that. You know, it's time to alter or abolish. And we're getting to that point because this, you can't divert the resources to the war machine to anything else because it's not there. There isn't any more money. It is all borrowing against my grandchildren. So stop. Stop advocating for it. Stop using examples of it. Start, you know, advocating for the individual doesn't get a 45 to their forehead and their money taken from them. That's never even advocated. That's why you're talking about at the end of the hour, last segment, that libertarians you met, you know, they're just like, and the difference is what? And how do you argue with them? I mean, what do you say? You go, well, we're different because what?
Well, yeah, no, and again, as I said to you off air, I believe, you know, MPP's belief is that government does have a role. The question is, what is that role, and who's going to make those decisions?
Force and fraud. You know, you can't. We're here to protect you against people that would do you harm, but then
right. They
always become the one doing the harm.
Right. Well, and you know, that's not an unfair characterization. I mean, one of the things I can say from personal experience is that elected officials are very happy with a complacent population.
Yeah.
And the view of a lot of elected officials is, if I don't hear from you, I don't have to care about what it is that you think, which is why, you know, kicking back to President Eisenhower's plea for vigilance and as you point out, the sort of coercive effect or the coercive power of that's necessary in the decision-making process.
You know, Chris, I'm gonna share something with you you probably don't know, and it'll help you understand our perspective. The Ron Paul Revolution, the Lovolution, that love logo you probably saw all over the place.
Yeah.
I'm the one that designed that.
Oh,
okay?
There you go.
So we were the ones that were kind of, it started here in Phoenix and it just exploded all over the country. And I went everywhere teaching people just how to make the signs. I didn't care what they said. You know, make whatever you, and that was the whole point. You had the Republican machine wanting to get control of it. You know, even Ron Paul and the Campaign for Liberty, all that has nothing to do with the Lovolution.
Right.
What happened was, is that they don't, anything in politics is always like a suitcase full of votes. It's a block of votes. How are we going to use this to force compliance with the blah, 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 blah? What they don't understand is there is an entire generation with the internet that has grown up understanding that they can make decisions better for themselves. When you have the Tea Party and you have Republicans and Democrats, all of this stuff is about how they're going to justify taking their wealth, their time, their effort, their future, their indebtedness, their everything, their allegiance, their obedience. So I'm going, this is done. It's over. It's gone. It's not even mathematically possible. So we have to add, that's why you start hearing Ralph Nader coming out, hey, there's going to be a progressive libertarian alliance and all this kind of stuff. And I'm going, well, I can see that progressives are starting to come over this way, but it's not because there's some overlapping, we want to wear the ring of power, lever of power, give me, I'll do good with it kind of thing. It's that libertarianism is becoming very dominant because there's no other alternative. The other alternative is somebody else taking your money. And I'm going, and Eisenhower, really, I want to finish this one part that what we were talking about here. You're saying partly because of the huge cost involved, a government contract becomes virtually a substitute for intellectual curiosity. That's the moral hazard. But and then he went on to say, for every old blackboard, there are now hundreds of new electronic computers. This is 61.
Right.
The prospect of domination of the nation's scholars by federal employment, project allocations, and the power of money is ever present and is gravely to be regarded. Yet, in holding scientific research and discovery in respect, as we should, we must also be alert to the equal and opposite danger that public policy could itself become the captive of a scientific technological elite. This is what that was the whole military-industrial complex part was building up to that part.
Right.
And they always blow that part off. And I'm telling my audience and sharing with you, I am very glad that you're out there pointing out the hypocrisy of them trying to use Eisenhower and MLK and all these other guys to make their point that, you know, well, they would want this stuff. and then going, no, 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 we could do these other things. We need to start thinking about other stuff. And I'm going, you know what some of that other stuff is? I get to keep my money. How about that? I vote that one. Am I allowed to? Does my vote even count? When we come back, Chris Hellman, I want to talk about MLK and how they tried to twist what he had to say and see what Chris Hellman from the National Priorities Project has to say about that. We'll be right back.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Turn on the tube, well, I see a whole lot of people dying. Don't blame me. They point the crooked little fingers at everybody else. Spend all the time feeling sorry for themselves. Victim of this, victim of that. Your mama's too thin and your daddy too fat. Get over it. Get over it. All this running and crying.
Get over it. Get over it. Get over it. Yeah, you know, we One-Eyed Jack here. We're having a conversation about the proper role of government with my guest, Chris Hellman from the National Priorities Project. Now, we got all the information up there for you to be able to go and get fully educated on what they want to share with you. But the one thing that you had in here, Chris, was Martin Luther King. He has a quote that says, "A nation that continues year after year to spend more money on military defense than on programs of social uplift is approaching spiritual death." Now, that certainly rings true, and I want to define programs of social uplift, and that's what I would anticipate that you're advocating.
Well, one of the things that he was very committed to after, you know, establishing equality amongst people was access to quality, affordable health care. You know, I continue to be amazed that in the most wealthy nation in the world, we still have people who are denied, for whatever reason, access to quality care. So I think that
official,
you know,
licensed, government-approved run.
Yeah,
care?
You know, we can discuss what that is. I think it could take a lot of different shapes and forms. I think that given the resources that we have available and are already putting into it, because we spend, you know, several trillion dollars a year on healthcare through the government and through private insurance companies and stuff like that, that no matter how you shape it, we ought to be able to put together a better system than the one we have.
May I share one with you?
Sure.
This is Let's imagine this, that Chris and Ernie have a goal of providing better health care for those that desire need it. I mean, I would think that we would overlap on that desire. If I could give you, you know, just real simple, a statement that, you know, just get government out of the way, allow Doogie Howser, MD, to do brain surgery on you. I mean, if you want to have a 16-year-old do brain surgery on you, you need a 16-year-old doing brain surgery on you, okay? If I am able to go and get my teeth cleaned by a dental hygienist in her living room, well, make it legal. The only difference is she's got to do it in a dentist chair or something. If I have the ability to be able to go to the feed store right now, not later, right now, and get a vial of penicillin and a 40, you know, that costs $10, you know, for about a gazillion shots, and it's like a half pint, and I go and get a syringe for 49 cents and give myself a shot, boom, done. A lot of people don't know that, and that's illegal. If I go to get some kind of a cream for a skin condition or whatever, I got to go to the doctor, get a prescription, get the cream, has no ill effect. There's no side. I'm not snorting it. I'm not boiling it down or anything. But it's all these licensing and regulation and controls for me to be able to provide for my own health care is because of some law, because of some restriction, because of some collectivization under the AMA, the Medical Association, something. And I go, you want to have more people get access to health care cheaper, get the government out of the way.
Yeah, I can't go along with you on
that. I know.
I think that there's at the very least a need for standardization and quality.
That's what the courts are for instance, force and fraud.
For instance, I want to know that the 10 milligrams of penicillin I bought in New York has the same impact as the 10 milligrams
fraud.
Of penicillin I bought in... Right, but the problem is that, you know, fraud takes a little bit of time to develop, and bacterial viruses do not. So this is something where I need to know it in advance.
Okay, now let's go ahead and talk. Let's walk this through.
Yeah.
If I was to demonstrate that this policy would have more life, less death, higher quality of living, would it make a difference?
Yeah, I mean, if it's achievable, but again, I still think that the government has a role in providing, you know, again, minimum standards of safety and quality control, and I don't think you can do that collectively or through the use of market forces. I really don't.
See, that's where we differ,
yeah.
And I'm glad we've had the conversation, because it's always no sense talking past each other. You know, we got to get down to what the fundamental disagreement is, and once we do that, then, you know, hey, we can, you know, go to barbecue and have our kids play. But
right.
The thing is that, you know, that's where the difference is. There are many that are in the public policy and influence and lobbying realm of whatever that believe there is a role of government, that we are better served by them deciding what is and is not safe or should go in our body, and they're regulated and this and that. And I am of the opinion it doesn't work that way, that whenever there are these entities, they are always controlled by the very industry they're supposed to regulate. I give you FDA, Wall Street, SEC, financial collapse, on, you know, I mean, need I go on? So I'm just going, this is a fundamental difference of where libertarians have absolutely no pleasure whatsoever in screaming neon, I told you so, when this thing comes down, and it's coming down.
Yeah, and again, as you say, it's good to be able to have the fundamental disagreement. I see the problems that you see. I just think that the solution is a different one than
which
than
is what? What is your solution?
Well, again, I think you make the system better, and I think that that's the vigilance portion of it, which is how do you avoid situations where industries regulate themselves? You know, I focus my attention on the military. I always have. When you've got, for instance, you know, people who worked at the Pentagon going to work, you know, as they retire, you know, in their late 40s or early 50s, going to work for the same corporations with whom they were supposed to have oversight capability, you've got a problem. And, you know, there are thousands of examples that fall into that category.
Department of government, on
yeah,
the social,
absolutely.
Economic, military side, it is, yeah, because of government this stuff happens. You know, it's because there's a big chunk of money there.
Yeah, that's true. And money does disproportionately drive the decision making process.
Then stop taking
it. In Washington. There's no doubt about it.
Stop taking the money.
Yeah, that's you know, I mean, that's one of the strongest arguments I've ever heard for campaign finance reform, which is, you know, let's do something about the money. Let's cap the amount that we spend on it. Let's take, you know, the amount of time that politicians spend fundraising and reduce it significantly.
All right.
so they can tend to the nation's business.
Campaign financing. Let me give you my spiel on that one.
Yeah. Well, I'd love to hear it.
Well, you know, it's my money. I can spend on, I can give, you know, if I, in fact, I'll give you a perfect example, the Ron Paul Levolution. Hundreds of millions of dollars got spent on that thing.
Yeah.
It just went through individuals doing what they want, called the First Amendment. I put up my banner on the freeway, kiss it. You know, there's nothing you can do about it. It's called the First Amendment. Well, we need to control, and you shouldn't be able, and you're violating, you know, the chain link fence or something. You know,
yeah.
You know,
I hear you. And I gave a good pitch for the First Amendment earlier in our discussion, and I find, you know, this is one of the areas where I find I run afoul of myself. My problem with this idea that, you know, money is First Amendment and shouldn't be limited is that it tilts the playing field, to my mind, towards people who already have money, and I, you know, I don't want the governing body in this country to be people who are independently wealthy. I'm glad they have the money. I'm glad they made it for themselves. But I don't think they share the values of the majority of American
people.
Well,
I'll tell you, these revolutionaries, they didn't have any money.
Yeah, and that's great.
You know
that's the advantage of a ground-up, ground-swell.
It was a perfect example of exactly what you were hoping would happen from the people up. I tell you what they ran up against. They ran up against those that didn't care about whether you had the money or being right or had a movement or whatever. That was not the point. The point was is that you're going to be messing with our money. Money always makes its way to power. I don't care what laws you pass. You can talk about campaign reform all you want. You know, McCain-Feingold, man, it didn't stop McCain from getting whatever he needed. This is all just a veneer. It's just a joke. And we know it. I mean, out here, we're saying we know it. So we bypassed it. But the point is that if you eliminate the power, then there's no need for the money to go. I've run for, heck, I ran against McCain. You know, my thing is that I'm going, look, the money is not the problem. It's the power is the problem. I guarantee you take away the power for them to do stuff to and for and against and the benefit of, the money goes away. The money is to get to the power to get more money. You know, stop having the power of government. The need for the money to go and get some goes away, and it goes to more productive purposes. Hey, Chris, I'm glad that we got a chance to share.
Yeah, let's do it again sometime.
And it's at least you understand our perspective, and it's going to play out more, and hopefully it'll get incorporated in your rhetoric and make you more popular. Chris Hellman, National Priorities Project. You can Google it, look it up on today's archive, get more information. Chris, thanks for coming on.
Take care.
You too. Declare your independence with me, Ernest Hancock, right at the top of the hour. This is Ernest Hancock. I'm publisher of freedomsphoenix.com and the radio talk show host of Declare Your Independence. Now, I want to give you my personal endorsement of a wealthy U.S. citizen that is predicting that in 2011, we will witness the most important day in America in more than 50 years. He's produced a video for you. It's a real eye-opener, and I want to make sure that you have an opportunity to watch it. www.endofamerica1and7.com. endofamerica17.com. This video has the history of how we got where we are now and where we're going and why. Now, it's a lengthy video. It'll be about 20 minutes, but you need to watch this so you understand what's going to happen to this country and how you can protect your wealth and even benefit financially. Now, you go there. It's free. I want you to watch this video. You need to have this information so that you can survive the economic collapse that's coming to America. It's not if, it's when. That's End of America, the numbers 1and7.com. After you watch it, you'll understand why I endorsed it.